Hour number two of overtime here on The Fan with Toby Altizer. Taking you up until Nationals baseball at 6 o'clock. To Burgundy and Gold game day on The Fan. You want to hop in, 800-636-1067 on the MGM National Harbor listener lines. You can also tweet at me at Toby underscore Altizer. So, the other day, ESPN put out an article talking about team ceilings and floors. Basically, taking a look at what's the best case scenario if everything goes exactly according to plan and maybe even better. And what is the floor? If everything goes horribly wrong, what is the worst possible that a team could finish? And ESPN plugged it into their football power index. They ran a bunch of simulations. Seems like they ran 20,000 is what they said. And they picked out the middle 90% of those. So they took out the top 10% and the bottom 10%. So with that, Max, I ask you, if everything goes correctly, Jaden Daniels proves he's the guy, Jahan Dotson steps up as a number two, Emmanuel Forbes not only plays as playable, but plays really well, the defense is good, maybe even a fringe top 10 units. If all those things happen, this is living in fairy tale land. What do you think the best record they could possibly finish with that?
11-6.
Okay.
Best possible 11-6.
Yeah. If everything goes correctly, and this is fairy tale land, this is where if you're a fan and you want to be super homerish, this is your chance right here. The best possible record they can finish with, 11-6. I think that's reasonable. I had this discussion with Craig yesterday. He said 11-6. Mm-hmm. I said probably 10-7.
Yeah.
Their ceiling, according to ESPN, is 9-8.
Wow.
9-8. To me, that seems too low.
A little bit, yeah.
Because RG3 led this. It's totally different.
Very different.
We're 12 years past that. RG3 won 10 games in a 16-game schedule.
Mm-hmm.
What makes you think Jaden can't win 10?
Right?
I mean, seriously.
He puts it on a dime.
Well, this is also, too, this is not nearly the same team that we saw a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
Okay, it's not. But before last season, they went 8-8-1 with Taylor Heinicke at quarterback.
Exactly.
I understand it's not the same team. Last year, they were 4-13. But I think the ingredients are there that they could have a decently successful season. Now, the floor is 4-13. So to me, if you're going to say that the floor is 4-13, you got to give them at least 10 wins as a possibility.
Yeah.
Like, I think 4-13 is a possibility. And it doesn't even mean that Jaden has sucked for them to go to 4-13.
No.
Like, I think there's a distinct possibility that Jaden could play well and they could still finish around there. But I thought it was a little bit crazy to think that their ceiling, everything goes correctly. Jaden goes out, wins Rookie of the Year, and plays at a C.J. Stroud level as a rookie. Terry McLaurin goes for 1,400 yards. Brian Robinson and Austin Ekeler proved to be one of the best duos in the National Football League this season. Jahan Dotson emerges as a true number two option, going for just under 1,000 yards maybe. Zach Ertz and Ben Sinnott are a good tight end combo. The offensive line holds up at a average to above average rate. Cliff Kingsbury calls an efficient offense. Joe Witt turns the defense around, and you've got a formidable pass rush up the middle combined with an aggressive attacking style with Frankie Louvu lining up all over the formation. Bobby Wagner leading the defense by, you know, being the signal caller and getting everybody in position. And guys like Emmanuel Forbes, Benjamin St. Juice taking steps, and Mikey Sanra still being a real impact player as a rookie. If all those things go right, the best they can do is 9-8? I don't know. To me, that seems low. To me, that seems incredibly low. And where would you lean? Okay, we can ask it this way. 9-8 is their ceiling. 4-13 is their floor. Which side would you lean on if you had to pick? Not to say that they're going to finish either one of these things, but if you had to say, like, I would lean more towards them getting closer to this one, which one would you choose?
I would probably lean to them being better than they were last year.
Okay, so you probably lean towards the ceiling.
Like, what, yeah.
I would say, to me, they're a 7-win team. 7-8 yeah. win team.
I agree.
So, you know, that's pretty closer to that ceiling. And to me, that's where it gets crazy. Like, I think they're a 7-win team, and that's just being objective as I can be while still being relatively optimistic with some of the stuff that's going on with the team. I think 7 wins is a pretty realistic expectation. You're telling me only two different performances? Two losses get turned into wins, and that's their
best possible
scenario?
Yeah.
To me, that just seems a little bit crazy. But what are, like, the key factors of this? So we'll start with Jaden. What does Jaden have to do for this team to reach, let's just say, their ceiling of 9-8? I think Jaden has to go out there and be efficient. I think that's going to be the big part this year, watching this football team, is can Jaden be efficient, quick, and smart with the football? And what do I mean by that? I'm talking about with an offensive line that I still think is going to be a little bit of a liability. You know, I think that Brandon Coleman will see when he can get back out on the field. But if Brandon Coleman can step in and play left tackle, I think he can play solid there. But I don't think he's going to play at Trent Williams level, obviously. So you're still going to have, you know, some questions over there on that side. Left guard, I've talked about this a bunch. They signed a backup left guard to play starting left guard. So if Allegretti's starting at left guard, you can't exactly feel confident in your left guard spot. Biadasz is solid at center. Cosmi is good at right guard, and I think everybody in the fan base is a little bit worried if Andrew Wiley is starting at right tackle. So I think when I say he needs to be efficient, it is take the snap, ball out. Very Tua-like in a lot of ways. Tua can almost get away with not having an offensive line by how quick he gets the ball out. So seriously, he can almost get away with not even having a legitimate offensive line because he gets the ball out so quick to his weapons. Now, difference there, the weapons are Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle. Here, they're Terry McLaurin, and we don't know who wide receiver two is, according to Dan Quinn. So, there are definitely some questions there. But to me, for Jaden, one of the big things is he's going to have to work quickly. And we've seen him do that all throughout camp. We saw him do that at times in that first game, but not really, because he only threw the ball a couple of times. So, We need to see him be quick and efficient with his reads. He needs to protect himself. I think that might even be the biggest thing because the best ability is availability. And so for him, whatever happens in the pocket's going to happen. And you can't really prevent those sorts of injuries. Like, guys are falling at your legs and sometimes guys fall wrong. And yeah, that's going to happen. That's football. But he has to protect himself by the way he runs. And I've alluded to this plenty of times. If you go back and watch what Lamar Jackson did last year versus previous seasons, you could tell a difference in his running style. You could tell that when he was running, he was almost in third gear versus fifth gear because he was keeping an eye and he was hyper aware of what was going on around him and where anybody else was. And it was almost like he had a force field or a shield around him. And as soon as someone hit that shield, whether it was 2 or 3 yards worth of space, he would just go down. Jaden needs to be like that. And the one thing that concerned me the most that I've seen at practices with my own eyes is when Jaden will go out there and he'll run some sort of read option or he's escaping the pocket on a pass play and he gets to the outside and he gets cut off and he cuts it back up the middle. That scares me to death. Because that's getting into linebacker territory. That's getting into potential coming back as a defensive lineman territory. And him getting plastered by one of those guys is really scary because you've watched his film at LSU. And his film at LSU, while it's fantastic to watch him running and it's fantastic to watch him throw the ball, there are also some very Looney Tunes-like collisions that happen with Jaden Daniels that we saw a lot in college, and you cannot have those. So to me, he needs to be efficient, he needs to be safe, but I think he can be electric. I think that he can absolutely be a difference maker in year one, and we'll see how quickly he can become that for this team, but I think he can be more than just a game manager early on. I think he can be a true difference maker for this football team, and I think they almost need him to be on the offense with some of the weapons. And I also think that they're going to depend on the running game. I think that they're going to try and ease him into this season and, you know, maybe not have him be that difference maker right away, even though I think he could do it. I think they're going to want to ease him in by handing the football off. Because if you looked across the offense at the different position groups, I think the one you'd feel the most confident in right now has got to be running back. Wide receiver, you're looking at Terry McLaurin, and then we don't even know who wide receiver two is yet, as they continue to search for it, as Dan Quinn alluded to earlier this week. So you can't feel confident in wide receiver when you've only got one guy in one position settled down, even though Terry's awesome. Tight end, I like Zach Ertz, and he's looked much better than what I expected, but I don't know that I can count on him for all 17 games just in terms of health because of his age. Ben Sinnott's a rookie, and most reports at camp weren't great, but he looked good against the Jets. Still, don't quite know what you're going to get out of him. Cole Turner's still unproven. John Bates is kind of just a blocker. Offensive line, I already talked about. Question marks all over that. Quarterback, as much as we love Jaden, there's still obviously going to be question marks. We don't exactly know what you're going to get out of Jaden yet. You kind of know what you're going to get out of B-Rob, and you kind of know what you're going to get out of Austin Ekeler. And I think with Ekeler, it looks like he's got a little bit more of a step than what he had last season. You know, there was a run that he had last year that I pointed out, and I was getting flamed a little bit on Twitter, rightfully so for it. It was like he had a run, I think it was against Green Bay, where he ran it around the left side, and Austin Ekeler 3 and 4 years ago in his prime, Austin Ekeler maybe takes that to the house. If nothing else, he breaks it off for a 40-yard run. And he ended up only picking up like 15 or 20 yards because he didn't have any acceleration or burst around the edge. I think he's gotten some of that back, so maybe he was injured last season and it was something that was really hampering him. But he looks like he's gotten some burst back. I don't know that he's exactly back to the Austin Ekeler that was scoring touchdowns every single game and winning people fantasy leagues, but we'll see. But I know that you're going to get some reliability out of Austin Ekeler, regardless. And I know you're going to get reliability out of Brian Robinson. And so if I'm Cliff Kingsbury, one, I'm going to use a lot of two-back sets. I'm going to use those guys in different ways. The story last year at training camp, if you remember, was Brian Robinson and his hands. Remember, a lot of people were talking about that with Bieniemy and saying, oh, look, he's able to catch the ball out of the backfield, which we thought he had hands of stone, and somehow he's got soft hands and catching the football, and you never really saw it. You saw it a couple of times. Was it the Seattle game where you saw a couple of rollouts from Howell and he hit Brian Robinson? Those were nice, but for the most part, you didn't see a lot of that stuff from Brian Robinson. I think you could see some two-back sets. You get Ekeler out there. You get Brian Robinson out there. Maybe a motion and Ekeler out. I think there are some fun ways that they can fool around with some formations where you have both of those backs on the field. And frankly, if you want to go, let's get our best 11 on the field, they're definitely part of your best 11, right? Like, Zach Ertz is out there, Terry's out there, Jaden's your quarterback, you've got your five linemen. I mean, you're looking at B-Rob, Terry, Ekeler, maybe Dotson and Ertz as your best five skill possession players, and right now, we're still trying to figure out if Dotson's going to play that number two receiver role. So I think you could run some maybe two tight end sets. Maybe you run some two running back sets. And that's the thing, too, that I think is a misconception for a lot of people. People hear Cliff Kingsbury, and they only think about the pass game. And he's not just a passing guy. He's going to run the ball way more than Bieniemy ever did. It's going to be a lot for an air raid guy, so to speak, even though he tried to distance himself from that. For an air raid guy, he is going to run the football, and he's not afraid to run the football. And I think for this team to be successful, frankly, they're going to have to be able to run the football because that's going to help out the offensive line. I think you saw, and it's one drive, so it's hard to take too much out of it. But I think you saw in one drive against the Jets when Jaden was out there, how running the football was able to help out the offensive line and allow Jaden to do some stuff in the pocket. And that's something that just didn't happen last year. So I think when we look at this projection by ESPN that calls it a ceiling of 9-8, I think if you still had Eric Bieniemy as the offensive coordinator with this offensive line and a rookie quarterback, I could understand being a little hesitant. I think the way that Cliff is going to call this offense and the way that Jaden has shown that he can get through his reads very quickly, I think you're going to be able to run an offense, even if the offensive line isn't up to par, isn't even an average unit. It can still be below average, and I think Jaden Daniels can function. I mean, think about Joe Burrow. I know they're not the same type of quarterback, but think about Joe Burrow once he kind of settled into the National Football League. They took Ja'Marr Chase over Penei Sewell, and that was a very shoddy offensive line, and he took him to a Super Bowl. Not to say that Jaden's going to do that necessarily, but he made it work because he's able to get through his reads. I think that Jaden's able to get through his stuff and do stuff without having to have that stellar offensive line. I think the way that the offense is going to be called this year with the plays and with the quarterback play, it's definitely going to help out that offensive line a lot, make it look a lot better. I still don't think, though, that it's going to be an above-average line. So there are still a lot of questions about that. I want to talk about the defense. I want to talk about what's necessary for them to be able to help this team reach more of its ceiling, which I think is higher than 9-8. I said probably 10-7. You said 11-6. Maybe we'll say around 10.5 wins. If they're going to reach somewhere around where they're in playoff contention coming into December, what is the defense going to have to do? For the offense, like I said, they're going to have to be able to run the football. Jaden's going to have to be efficient and smart, and they're going to have some guys step up to help out outside of a Terry McLaurin, and they're going to have to live on running the ball with B-Rob and Austin Eckler. What about the defensive side of the ball? We'll break it all down. If you want to hop in, 800-636-1067. The MGM National Harbor listener lines are open. It's a Burgundy and Gold game day here on 106.7 The Fan and the Team 980. Welcome back. It's Burgundy and Gold game day here on 106.7 The Fan and the Team 980. 800-636-1067. You want to hop in on the MGM National Harbor listener lines. Toby Altizer taking you up till 6 o'clock. Then we'll turn it over to Charlie Slows and Dave Jagler for some Nats baseball. And to Doc's earlier point about, you know, should guys play in the preseason or not, I'm watching, I don't know, a team that's won back-to-back Super Bowls. Patrick Mahomes is on the field, and by all reports, he's going to play the most of, if not the entire first half. I don't know. Maybe the team that's won the last couple Super Bowls understands a little bit of a blueprint. I don't know. What do you think about the Commanders' ceiling on ESPN being listed as 9-8? And how do they reach that 9-8 ceiling? If not, maybe a little bit higher than that. 800-636-1067. Let's also get out to Steve, who is in Fairfax. Steve, what's going on?
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
What's going on, Steve?
Not much. I actually had a couple questions for you because sure. I haven't been keeping up so far this year.
Okay.
What are your expectations for the role that Luke McCaffrey is going to play, that rookie receiver? And who's the best edge pass rusher we got now that Chase and Sweat are gone?
Sure. Steve, appreciate the phone call. Yeah, I'll start with the edge rusher. So edge rusher, they brought in Dorrance Armstrong. I think he's going to be their top edge guy. But I think they're going to get a little bit funky with some of the fronts they're going to throw out there with Frankie Louvu maybe lining up at the edge sometimes. Heck, I don't know if Jamin's going to make the team or not, but is Jamin going to line up out there and see with some different stuff? But the top edge rush guy right now would be Dorrance Armstrong, followed by Cleland Farrell, then Dante Fowler, and then probably KJ Henry. I think that's 1-4 right there on the depth chart for you at edge rusher. For Luke McCaffrey, that's something that's still up in the air. I don't think anyone really knows. And that's something that, you know, Dan Quinn talked about wide receiver 2. Who is that going to be? And he said they're in the midst of the search of it. They're in the middle of it. And he mentioned Dotson, obviously. He mentioned he'd been impressed with Zacchaeus. He mentioned McCaffrey in there as well. And I think early on in the season with McCaffrey, I don't know that you'll see him a lot. So I think early on it's gonna be a lot of Dotson and Zacchaeus and the other guys, De'Ami Brown. But I think towards the second half of the season, maybe you see him take a slot sort of role. I also think they want to use him in a variety of different ways, whether it's lining him up in the backfield. You know, it's something that early on in camp, we saw him taking handoffs from Anthony Lynn. I don't know that they're going to necessarily do that, but I think they are going to put that in their bag that if they want to, they can line up with him in the backfield, maybe with Brian Robinson or Austin Eckler, or him as a solo back, and maybe they'll hand it off to him, you know, occasionally Curtis Samuel type of role there. Otherwise, I think he would fit in the slots. And you know, it gets interesting when you get towards the back end of that roster. I would think that Jamison Crowder is going to make it for special teams, so maybe Crowder fills in as a slot guy early on, or Jahan Dotson is going to be your slot guy. But I think that McCaffrey will slot out a role maybe more in the second half of the season than first half. But I think if he's going to work as a someone in the offense and be a predominant player, I think he's going to be more so out of the slot and in a variety of different looks, because I think he has some of that creativity and ability to move around the formation. So I think with him, you could see him used in a variety of different ways. Appreciate the questions, Steve. Looking at the defensive side of the ball, if this team wants to reach their peak, if they want to reach their ceiling, the number one thing that worries me, number one thing, is we hear all the time people talking about marrying the back end with the front end or vice versa, the front end with the back end. And I think that this defense, when Joe Witt Jr. talks about creating turnovers and being aggressive, I think it's naturally going to create those turnovers because up front they're going to throw different looks. Whether it's Frankie Louvu lining up, you know, in one of the A-gaps, or he's lining up on the edge, or you've got Chin lining up there, or you've got, you know, seven guys across the line of scrimmage. I think they're going to do a lot of different stuff. So I think up front they're going to do a lot of exotic blitzes and different things. What worries me is the back end, where you might be bringing a blitz, but are you going to be able to cover with Forbes and St. Juice? And, you know, if Chin's going to be playing the strong safety, Quan Martin, whoever else is going to be playing out there in the DBs, are they going to be able to hold up if you're going to be sending extra guys in there on the blitz? Because I think they're going to be aggressive. And some of it's going to be the new sexy thing, which is the simulated pressures, which is, you know, you're only bringing four, but you don't know where it's coming from. And so it feels like pressure when in reality, you're only bringing four and you're still dropping seven, but a defensive end drops out on one side or whatever the case may be. I think they'll do some of that as well. But I'm curious if they're going to be able to marry what they're doing on the front end, where they're playing that more aggressive style, which should theoretically help corners and DBs not have to be in coverage as long. But if you're getting beat right away, that could be a problem. And I think the key here is I was talking with this about this with Craig yesterday. The difference is I don't know that there's going to be coverage bust as much as we saw with Jack Del Rio. You know, because with busts, we're talking about guys miscommunicating, not knowing what's going on. Think about when you saw Cooper Kupp, you know, maybe one of the best receivers in football, a guy that's just unbelievable, and you didn't even see a DB in the screen. That would be called a coverage bust. You know, that's where there was a miscommunication. Someone didn't do their job. Whatever the case may be. I don't know that you'll see that as much as you'll see coverage breakdowns where there's just not enough guys to cover the ground and guys are sitting down in open zones and they're finding open spots in the different, you know, the different ways. Or he beats a guy in man coverage, whatever the case. It's not necessarily that someone screwed up as much as it is they just beat them with their scheme on what they're trying to run with Washington. So I'm intrigued whether they're going to be able to marry that. And to me, that's the key to the success this year. If they can marry what they're doing on the front end, where they're going to play, I would think, a more aggressive style, you know, it's third and five. You know, with Jack Del Rio, there was never going to be pressure almost ever. Now, with Joe Witt, he's going to line six guys up across the line of scrimmage. You don't know if four are coming. You don't know if three are coming. You don't know if all six are coming. But he's going to try different stuff up front there. I don't know if they're going to be able to marry the front end with the back end where they want to play that more aggressive style. That's the thing to me. If they can marry those, then I think you could see a solid defense and something where in natural form, where last year with Jack Del Rio, when he talked about trying to force turnovers, I don't think that was natural to that defense. And in turn, it kind of made that defense vulnerable. Whereas with this defense, I think they're naturally going to be more aggressive and those turnovers are going to come in more natural ways just because of different looks that the quarterback is going to get and the pressure that's going to be on the quarterback. So I'm intrigued by that. I think that's the number one thing that's going to be able to create the ability for this team to reach their ceiling defensively. Let's take a break when we come back. When I continue talking about the Commanders, also want to take a look around the NFL. How are some of the other rookie quarterbacks doing this week of preseason? 800-636-1067. If you want to hop in on the MGM National Harbor listener lines, see Ronnie and Marilyn. We'll get to you on the other side here. Let's take a break. It's a Burgundy and Gold game day here on 106.7 The Fan and the Team 980. It's a Burgundy and Gold game day here on The Fan, 800-636-1067. You want to hop in on the MGM National Harbor listener lines. Toby Altizer taking you up till 6 o'clock. And we'll turn it over to Charlie and Dave for some Nationals baseball. Don't forget, coming up tonight on the Team 980 at 9 o'clock, Denton Day got you with a Burgundy and Gold postgame show as well, reacting to all things Jaden Daniels and tonight's preseason game against the Dolphins. A quick update from Nikki Javala of the Washington Post. Brandon Coleman, Marcus Mariota, Bobby Wagner, John Allen, Daron Payne, Cleland Farrell, and Dorrance Armstrong were all working out on the field pregame, so they're not going to play. So again, Coleman, Mariota, Wagner, John Allen, Daron Payne, Farrell, and Armstrong all likely out for tonight. Let's get out to the phone lines, 800-636-1067. You want to hop in on the MGM National Harbor listener lines. Ronnie is in Maryland. Ronnie, what's going on?
Hey, what's going on, Ryan? Thanks for taking my call. I got a couple things I want to chime on. One was, I'm like you. I don't like if the Skins are on, I don't watch the red zone. I don't watch nothing.
Exactly,
I don't care.
Right.
I don't care if we're getting blown out or whatever. I can't turn it off. It's my Skins. I'm old school, so I can remember. I can remember the days when the RFK was rocking. So I'll never leave them. They'll always be my team. Another thing is, you talked about the ceiling. Just with having Daniels, if he progresses and everybody's talking him up, so he could be Rookie of the Year, he is like a million times better than Hal. So if he, I think we can actually win 11 games. I mean, if things fall right, we could win 11 games. Or if things fall wrong, but I don't see it. I see this coach staff's a lot better than what we had last year. I won't be able to watch the game or listen to the game at all tonight. I'm in Maryland. My team plays in Maryland, but I'm too much north. There's too much freaking purple going on around here. So I can't get the app, and I can't get Channel 9 out of D.C. So I'll have to check out NFL Network tomorrow. But I hope we have a good performance, and I just want no injuries. And then let's get ready for Tampa, and let's kick some butt, man.
Yes, sir. Ronnie, appreciate the phone call. Hopefully you're able to get some consumption of that game tonight.
Yeah, I'll probably watch NFL Network tomorrow morning.
Or maybe you can find like a bar or something in the area that'll have the game on or something. You can probably find.
Yeah, I'm gonna try to, but up here it's tough, man. I get a lot of frowns saying since I didn't convert to the Ravens, people are like, why didn't you convert? And man, I'm Burgundy and Gold. You cut me on Burgundy and Gold, like Doc said, Burgundy and Gold, and I'm dead and cold.
I love it, Ronnie. Appreciate it, man.
Thanks, man.
There you heard from Ronnie in Maryland. Yeah, I think you know when you look at this team, they've got a lot of the framework to be better than they were last year, obviously. But when you look at the ceiling of this team, and again, this is saying that everything goes exactly as planned, everything goes exactly as they want, and maybe even better in a lot of cases. But how in the world is it only 9-8 according to ESPN? And that's taking out the top 10%. I understand that they're trying to be, you know, somewhat realistic here. But, you know, when you have some of these other teams, let's take a look at some of the other teams with rookie quarterbacks. How about we start with the team that took Caleb Williams ahead of them, Chicago. They got him with a ceiling of 11-6. Like, they're a better football team. I don't think there's any question about that, just in terms of looking at their roster. They're a better football team. But, I don't know. I feel like the Commanders could match them. And the other thing about this, too, I think is interesting is, like, if Jaden comes out here and plays lights out, he could instantly step into being one of those difference maker type of quarterbacks that any team with that sort of quarterback could win double digit games any given year, right? Like you think about a Josh Allen, think about all the stuff that's gotten taken away from around him. You think he's going to win 9 games this year? You feel like he's going to win at least 10, right? Like, he's that sort of a guy. I'm not saying Jaden's there yet, but like Lamar, he's one of those guys. You feel like you can pencil him in for at least 10 wins every year as long as he stays healthy. Jaden, to me, is already a much more advanced passer than what Lamar was when he entered the league. I think Lamar is a better passer than he gets credit for. But I think it's pretty obvious, if you've watched Jaden at all, that he's a much more advanced passer coming into the league than Lamar was. And I think it's worth noting, too, that Lamar was a younger prospect when he came out. So, you know, there's a little differences there. But Jaden's a much more advanced passer, and I think in terms of running ability, they're different. But Jaden steps in immediately as a, what, top 5 running quarterback already? Like, when he takes off and runs in practice, he might be the fastest guy on the field.
Top 3.
I don't know if I want to go there yet because it's different styles. Like, if we're if we're going to go, like, fast guys, I think so. It's like Lamar, Justin Fields, and then probably Jaden somewhere in there. But, like, Josh Allen's a running quarterback.
Yeah, he is.
And right now, Josh Allen's, you know, he's proven himself. You kind of got to give him credit. And some of the other guys, you know, where does Anthony Richardson fill in there once he's healthy?
True, we haven't seen enough yet. But
some of these other guys. But regardless, I think at worst, top six, top seven, I think you can pretty comfortably probably say he's in the top five. And so if he comes in and he proves to be a good passer and he can run all over the yard, I don't know. You can dream a little bit as a Commanders fan because this kid, I think this is where I have a tough time. Like, I've seen some people on Twitter say, like, okay, you don't want to get ahead of your skis here. You don't want to get too crazy. And that is true. That is true. You don't want to set yourself up for failure again. And I know some Commanders fans, it seems like, have been very reserved. And I understand that as well. But, like, if you want to dream a little bit, I don't fault you one bit, especially with this kid. Because the way that he's handled his business, the way that he's gone about doing everything right. He works hard. He's at the facility early. He's building a reputation, a rapport with his guys. He's got, obviously, the talent level is spectacular. So to me, if you want to dream a little bit with this guy, it makes all the sense in the world. Because he's doing the steps necessary to be a guy. He's doing what's necessary. Like, we've seen other quarterbacks be successful by doing what Jaden Daniels is doing. And other quarterbacks that were that successful probably didn't even have the talent level of a Jaden Daniels. Because I think one thing that works in Jaden's favor is, and he's probably incredibly thankful. I think if you asked him, he'd be incredibly grateful for this, the hardship he had to go through in college. And I kind of dismissed the notion when we were talking about this during the draft process, but now it makes a little more sense to me why. You know, how many guys have we seen come into the league as young guys, and in their rookie season or second season, they struggle and they don't really ever get another chance? I don't think it's because they lack talent, but maybe they didn't have the work ethic necessary or whatever the reason, maturity level. I think Jaden learned that going from Arizona State to LSU. And so, in turn, you know, if that would have been something where he got drafted and then he didn't have that work ethic, if he had the same work ethic that he did at, you know, Arizona State, and he got drafted out of there, maybe he is a guy that started for a year, two, and then career fizzled out and lived as a career backup. In turn, what happened was he goes from Arizona State to LSU, realizes, I've got a lot of talent, but you still got to work hard. Because it's not as if he went from Arizona State to LSU and suddenly found all of this talent that he didn't have with the Sun Devils. So I think for him, it worked out, and in turn, it's carried over to the pros. And you got to feel good that, you know, this kid's much more mature than even I expected. And, you know, I was a Drake May guy during the draft. I know, you know, people are all over the place, and some people are trying to, oh, Drake May, whatever. I prefer Drake May. What I'll say right now, they made the right pick in Jaden Daniels. They made the right pick. And again, early on, we haven't seen him play a snap of real football yet, so we'll see. But Jaden is doing all the right things at this point to lead this franchise, and if you want to dream a little bit and get a little excited about this team, I wouldn't blame you one bit. Let's take a break. When we come back, I want to take a look around the National Football League at some of the other rookie quarterbacks, as well as we're going to talk with Craig Hoffman coming up at 5 o'clock, get his thoughts ahead of Commanders Dolphins. It's a Burgundy and Gold game day here on 106.7 The Fan and the Team 980. It's a Burgundy and Gold game day here on The Fan. Jaden Daniels, the number two overall pick, going to suit up for the Commanders tonight. Second time you'll get a chance to see him on the game field. Let's take a look around the National Football League, though, and see how some of the other rookie quarterbacks have done. We'll start with the number one overall pick, the guy that everyone was raving about today with some ridiculous throws. I've been watching the one throw to Rome Odunze over and over and over again because it's been mesmerizing to watch. Caleb Williams, first game at Soldier Field. Numbers, not overly impressive, but if you watch some of the throws, you got to be really, really impressed. 6 for 13 and 75 yards. He also rushed for a touchdown, ran one in from 7 yards away. But you saw the talents on display today at Soldier Field for Caleb Williams. I think I think Bears fans are going to be really fired up about him. Good reason to be. He is so talented, and I think he's going to be really, really good. I know a lot of people were out on him for whatever reason. Not me. Count me all the way in on Caleb Williams. I think he's going to be an absolute stud. Drake May, he played on Thursday night against the Eagles, and he was picked number 3 overall, just behind the Commanders. The Patriots took him. 6 of 11, 47 yards, 4 carries, 15 yards, and a touchdown. That whole Patriots quarterback room looked very uninspiring in that game. But there was one throw that looked very much like North Carolina Drake May. It was an incompletion, so I don't want to be one of those guys that makes too much about a pass that ultimately hit the ground. But he stepped up in the pocket, made a nice throw deep down the field, and Javon Baker was unable to haul it in. But he saw a little bit of why he was drafted where he was, where he was able to maneuver in the pocket, and he showed off the nice arm. And for the most part, it was an accurate throw. He had to throw it a little bit down the field, you know, past his receiver because there was a defender trailing him. The guy was open. It was a nice throw. You know, it's a tough catch, though. So it's one of those you don't blame the receiver, but it was a really good throw. But regardless, not necessarily the most impressive performance. Michael Penix, the Falcons played the Ravens earlier today. He did not play, and it doesn't sound like he's going to play in the third preseason game either. So it makes no sense to me. It makes no sense whatsoever. It's what I talked about with the Patriots last week, which, by the way, with the Patriots, back to that real quick, Gerard Mayo said after the game that their quarterback competition isn't decided. It's definitely not over. So I don't know that there's a chance that May starts week one, but maybe there is. Maybe there is. And if that's the case, I think it makes it more intriguing. And to be honest with you, with how Brissett's looked, which, by the way, Brissett kind of sucked when he played here in the preseason stuff. It wasn't very impressive. And I think when he stepped on the field in the actual game, he was fine. So maybe it's some of that. But with Drake May, he's been more impressive than Brissett because Brissett has looked awful. So maybe there's a chance they would do that. I don't think that's going to be the case, though. I think Brissett ultimately starts. But with Michael Penix, why are you not playing this guy? If you're not even going to see this guy for a couple of years, then why are you not playing him? You've already got a capable backup if something were to happen to Michael Penix and Taylor Heinicke, right? So the whole point of this is you're going to develop this guy to be your starting quarterback in, what, 2 to 3 years? So why is he not playing? Why? Get him some action, have him play, and just see what happens. I don't understand this one at all. What are you trying to keep him healthy for? Like, I understand you don't want him to get hurt. You want him to be able to continue to practice and develop. But, like, why are you acting super cautious with a guy who's not even supposed to suit up and play this year? He'll be your backup on game days, but he's not even supposed to step on the field this year. It's supposed to be Kirk Cousins. So why in the world is Michael Penix not playing? It makes absolutely no sense. This guy's not going to get game reps. So why is he not playing in the preseason? It's a perfect chance. This is like backups and rookies play in the preseason. He fits both of those bills. A backup and a rookie. Why is he not playing? Makes no sense. J.J. McCarthy for the Vikings, it sucks. He's out for the season. I saw that he was the first rookie, first rounder, quarterback that got hurt in the preseason and will miss his entire rookie season. That sucks. If you're a Vikings fan, that sucks. I don't know how much he was going to play anyways. Felt like Sam Darnold was going to start week one regardless. But man, does that suck if you're a Vikings fan, because he actually looks solid. He looks solid. And I think, you know, with some of these quarterbacks, I thought Caleb Williams to Chicago was a nice fit. Obviously, Jaden here is a nice fit. I didn't like the Drake May to New England fit. Penix with the Falcons, I didn't think it made any sense, but I think the fit is fine. I just didn't think the pick made sense. I think J.J. McCarthy to the Vikings, I didn't necessarily like McCarthy as a prospect, and yet I think in that spot, it's perfect. I think he will work well in Kevin O'Connell's offense, and I think you are seeing some of the glimpses of that. Unfortunately, now that season is done with a torn meniscus that he had surgery to repair, so hopefully it's something that it's a year-long thing, and that's it. And he comes back better than ever, but we'll see. It sucks for Vikings fans that he's done. Bo Nix, his first game, he was really impressive. Played a lot, too. 15 of 21, 125 yards and a touchdown, 3 carries for 17 yards. He doesn't play today. He'll play tomorrow against the Packers at 8 o'clock. He's another one that I know a lot of people weren't necessarily fans of his coming out, but he played a lot of college football, a lot of college football. So he's kind of pro-ready in a lot of ways, and he steps into a place where I'm not comparing these two guys, but they've got at least somewhat similar skill sets in that Bo Nix can do a lot of what Drew Brees did at the end of his career. Not what Drew Brees did when Drew Brees was winning, you know, a Super Bowl and playing extremely high-level football, but at the end of his career when Drew Brees was, you know, working his way out of the league, Bo Nix can do a lot of that stuff, if not a little bit better than that. He doesn't necessarily have the mind of Drew Brees. I'm not saying that. But, you know, Sean Payton, I think, is going to be able to work with him in a way that he did with a lot with Drew Brees, where he's going to be able to work with guys that maybe don't have the most talent in the world, but they're able to just go out there and execute the offense. And so I think Payton's going to like how he fits into that sort of a scheme. And right away, I think you're going to be able to see this guy be successful. Would surprise me if he doesn't start week one. You would agree with that, right, Max? Like, if, to me, the whole point is you draft this guy that's a little bit older, played a lot of college football, you might as well start him. That's why it made no sense for me to draft Penix, another guy that kind of fit into that mold a little bit. That one makes no sense. But I think Bo Nix starts week one for the Broncos.
Yeah, it's going to be tough to... I feel like Sean Payton's already got... has kind of secretly already chosen Bo as the starter, but...
I just think it makes sense.
Yeah.
I think for a lot of reasons. I think he fits exactly the mold that Sean Payton likes. And, you know, as nice as it is, it's a Burgundy and Gold game day here on The Fan, 800-636-1067. You want to hop in on the MGM National Harbor listener lines. Toby Altizer taking you up till 6 o'clock. And we'll turn it over to Charlie and Dave for some Nationals baseball. Don't forget, coming up tonight on the Team 980 at 9 o'clock, Denton Day got you with a Burgundy and Gold postgame show as well, reacting to all things Jaden Daniels and tonight's preseason game against the Dolphins. A quick update from Nikki Javala of the Washington Post. Brandon Coleman, Marcus Mariota, Bobby Wagner, John Allen, Daron Payne, Cleland Farrell, and Dorrance Armstrong were all working out on the field pregame, so they're not going to play. So again, Coleman, Mariota, Wagner, John Allen, Daron Payne, Farrell, and Armstrong all likely out for tonight. Let's get out to the phone lines, 800-636-1067. You want to hop in on the MGM National Harbor listener lines. Ronnie is in Maryland. Ronnie, what's going on?
Hey, what's going on, Ryan? Thanks for taking my call. I got a couple things I want to chime on. One was, I'm like you. I don't, like, if the Skins are on, I don't watch the red zone. I don't watch nothing.
Exactly,
I don't care,
right.
I don't care if we're getting blown out or whatever. I can't turn it off. It's my Skins. I'm old school, so I can remember the days when the RFK was rocking, so I'll never leave them. They'll always be my team. Another thing is, you talked about the ceiling. Just with having Daniels, if he progresses and everybody's talking him up, say he could be Rookie of the Year, he is like a million times better than Hal. So if he, I think we can actually win 11 games. I mean, if things fall right, we could win 11 games, or if things fall wrong, but I don't see it. I see this coach staff's a lot better than what we had last year. I won't be able to watch the game or listen to the game at all tonight. I'm in Maryland. My team plays in Maryland, but I'm too much north. There's too much freaking purple going on around here. So I can't get the app, and I can't get Channel 9 out of D.C. So I'll have to check out NFL Network tomorrow. But I hope we have a good performance, and I just want no injuries. And then let's get ready for Tampa, and let's kick some butt, man.
Yes, sir. Ronnie, appreciate the phone call. Hopefully you're able to get some consumption of that game tonight.
Yeah, I'll probably watch NFL Network tomorrow morning.
Or maybe you can find like a bar or something in the area that'll have the game on or something. You can probably find.
Yeah, I'm gonna try to, but up here it's tough, man. I get a lot of frowns saying since I didn't convert to the Ravens, people are like, why didn't you convert? And man, I'm Burgundy and Gold. You cut me on Burgundy and Gold, like Doc said, Burgundy and Gold, and I'm dead and cold.
I love it, Ronnie. Appreciate it, man.
Thanks, man.
There you heard from Ronnie in Maryland. Yeah, I think, you know, when you look at this team, they've got a lot of the framework to be better than they were last year, obviously. But when you look at the ceiling of this team, and again, this is saying that everything goes exactly as planned, everything goes exactly as they want, and maybe even better in a lot of cases. But how in the world is it only 9-8 according to ESPN? And that's taking out the top 10%. I understand that they're trying to be, you know, somewhat realistic here. But, you know, when you have some of these other teams, let's take a look at some of the other teams with rookie quarterbacks. How about we start with the team that took Caleb Williams ahead of them, Chicago? They got him with a ceiling of 11-6. Like, They're a better football team. I don't think there's any question about that, just in terms of looking at their roster. They're a better football team. But I don't know. I feel like the Commanders could match them. And the other thing about this, too, I think is interesting is, like, if Jaden comes out here and plays lights out, he could instantly step into being one of those difference-maker type of quarterbacks that any team with that sort of quarterback could win double-digit games any given year, right? Like, you think about a Josh Allen. Think about all the stuff that's gotten taken away from around him. You think he's going to win 9 games this year? You feel like he's going to win at least 10, right? Like, he's that sort of a guy. I'm not saying Jaden's there yet, but, like, Lamar, he's one of those guys. You feel like you can pencil him in for at least 10 wins every year as long as he stays healthy. Jaden, to me, is already a much more advanced passer than what Lamar was when he entered the league. I think Lamar is a better passer than he gets credit for. But I think it's pretty obvious, if you've watched Jaden at all, that he's a much more advanced passer coming into the league than Lamar was. And I think it's worth noting, too, that Lamar was a younger prospect when he came out. So, you know, there's a little differences there. But Jaden's a much more advanced passer. And I think in terms of running ability, they're different. But Jaden steps in immediately as a, what, top 5 running quarterback already? Like, when he takes off and runs in practice, he might be the fastest guy on the field.
Top 3.
I don't know if I want to go there yet, because it's different styles. Like, if we're going to go, like, fast guys, I think so. It's like Lamar,
yeah,
Justin Fields, and then probably Jaden somewhere in there. But, like, Josh Allen's a running quarterback.
Yeah, he is.
And right now, Josh Allen's, you know, he's proven himself. You kind of got to give him credit. And some of the other guys, you know, where does Anthony Richardson fill in there once he's healthy?
True, we haven't seen enough yet. But
some of these other guys. But regardless, I think, at worst, top 6, top 7. I think you can pretty comfortably probably say he's in the top 5. And so if he comes in and he proves to be a good passer and he can run all over the yard, I don't know. You can dream a little bit as a Commanders fan, because this kid, I think this is where I have a tough time. Like, I've seen some people on Twitter say, like, okay, you don't want to get ahead of your skis here. You don't want to get too crazy. And that is true. That is true. You don't want to set yourself up for failure again. And I know some Commanders fans, it seems like, have been very reserved. And I understand that as well. But, like, if you want to dream a little bit, I don't fault you one bit, especially with this kid. Because the way that he's handled his business, the way that he's gone about doing everything right, he works hard, he's at the facility early, he's building a reputation and rapport with his guys, he's got, obviously, the talent level is spectacular. So to me, if you want to dream a little bit with this guy, it makes all the sense in the world, because he's doing the steps necessary to be a guy. He's doing what's necessary. Like, we've seen other quarterbacks be successful by doing what Jaden Daniels is doing. And other quarterbacks that were that successful probably didn't even have the talent level of a Jaden Daniels. Because I think one thing that works in Jaden's favor is, and he's probably incredibly thankful. I think if you asked him, he'd be incredibly grateful for this, the hardship he had to go through in college. And I kind of dismissed the notion when we were talking about this during the draft process, but now it makes a little more sense to me why. You know, how many guys have we seen come into the league as young guys, and in their rookie season or second season, they struggle and they don't really ever get another chance? I don't think it's because they lack talent, but maybe they didn't have the work ethic necessary, or whatever the reason, maturity level. I think Jaden learned that going from Arizona State to LSU. And so, in turn, you know, if that would have been something where he got drafted and then he didn't have that work, if he had the same work ethic that he did at, you know, Arizona State, and he got drafted out of there, maybe he is a guy that started for a year, two, and then career fizzled out and lived as a career backup. In turn, what happened was, he goes from Arizona State to LSU, realizes, I've got a lot of talent, but you still got to work hard. Because it's not as if he went from Arizona State to LSU and suddenly found all of this talent that he didn't have with the Sun Devils. So I think for him, it worked out, and in turn, it's carried over to the pros. And you got to feel good that, you know, this kid's much more mature than even I expected. And, you know, look, I was a Drake May guy during the draft. I know, you know, people were all over the place, and some people are trying to, oh, Drake May, whatever. I prefer Drake May. What I'll say right now, they made the right pick in Jaden Daniels. They made the right pick. And again, it's early on. We haven't seen him play a snap of real football yet. So we'll see. But Jaden is doing all the right things at this point to lead this franchise. And if you want to dream a little bit and get a little excited about this team, I wouldn't blame you one bit. Let's take a break. When we come back, I want to take a look around the National Football League at some of the other rookie quarterbacks, as well as we're going to talk with Craig Hoffman coming up at 5 o'clock, get his thoughts ahead of Commanders Dolphins. It's a Burgundy and Gold game day here on 106.7 The Fan and the Team 980. It's a Burgundy and Gold game day here on The Fan. Jaden Daniels, the number 2 overall pick, going to suit up for the Commanders tonight. Second time you'll get a chance to see him on the game field. Let's take a look around the National Football League, though, and see how some of the other rookie quarterbacks have done. We'll start with the number 1 overall pick, the guy that everyone was raving about today with some ridiculous throws. I've been watching the one throw to Rome Odunze over and over and over again because it's been mesmerizing to watch. Caleb Williams, first game at Soldier Field. Numbers, not overly impressive, but if you watch some of the throws, you got to be really, really impressed. 6 for 13 and 75 yards. He also rushed for a touchdown, ran one in from 7 yards away. But you saw the talents on display today at Soldier Field for Caleb Williams. I think Bears fans are going to be really fired up about him. Good reason to be. He is so talented, and I think he's going to be really, really good. I know a lot of people were out on him for whatever reason. Not me. Count me all the way in on Caleb Williams. I think he's going to be an absolute stud. Drake May, he played on Thursday night against the Eagles, and he was picked number 3 overall, just behind the Commanders. The Patriots took him. 6 of 11, 47 yards, 4 carries, 15 yards, and a touchdown. That whole Patriots quarterback room looked very uninspiring in that game. But there was one throw that looked very much like North Carolina Drake May. It was an incompletion, so I don't want to be one of those guys that makes too much about a pass that ultimately hit the ground. But he stepped up in the pocket, made a nice throw deep down the field, and Javon Baker was unable to haul it in. But he saw a little bit of why he was drafted where he was able to maneuver in the pocket, and he showed off the nice arm. And for the most part, it was an accurate throw. He had to throw it a little bit down the field, you know, past his receiver because there was a defender trailing him. The guy was open. It was a nice throw. You know, it's a tough catch, though. So it's one of those you don't blame the receiver, but it was a really good throw. But regardless, not necessarily the most impressive performance. Michael Penix, the Falcons played the Ravens earlier today. He did not play, and it doesn't sound like he's going to play in the third preseason game either. So it makes no sense to me. It makes no sense whatsoever. It's what I talked about with the Patriots last week, which, by the way, with the Patriots, back to that real quick, Gerard Mayo said after the game that their quarterback competition isn't decided. It's definitely not over. So I don't know that there's a chance that May starts week 1, but maybe there is. Maybe there is. And if that's the case, I think it makes it more intriguing. And to be honest with you, with how Brissett's looked, which, by the way, Brissett kind of sucked when he played here in the preseason stuff. He wasn't very impressive. And I think when he stepped on the field in the actual game, he was fine. So maybe it's some of that. But with Drake May, he's been more impressive than Brissett because Brissett has looked awful. So maybe there's a chance they would do that. I don't think that's going to be the case, though. I think Brissett ultimately starts. But with Michael Penix, why are you not playing this guy? If you're not even going to see this guy for a couple of years, then why are you not playing him? You've already got a capable backup if something were to happen to Michael Penix and Taylor Heinicke, right? So the whole point of this is you're going to develop this guy to be your starting quarterback in, what, 2 to 3 years? So why is he not playing? Why? Get him some action, have him play, and just see what happens. I don't understand this one at all. What are you trying to keep him healthy for? Like, I understand you don't want him to get hurt. You want him to be able to continue to practice and develop. But, like, why are you acting super cautious with a guy who's not even supposed to suit up and play this year? He'll be your backup on game days, but he's not even supposed to step on the field this year. It's supposed to be Kirk Cousins. So why in the world is Michael Penix not playing? It makes absolutely no sense. This guy's not going to get game reps. So why is he not playing in the preseason? It's a perfect chance. This is like backups and rookies play in the preseason. He fits both of those bills. A backup and a rookie. Why is he not playing? Makes no sense. J.J. McCarthy for the Vikings, it sucks. He's out for the season. I saw that he was the first rookie, first rounder, quarterback that got hurt in the preseason and will miss his entire rookie season. That sucks. If you're a Vikings fan, that sucks. I don't know how much he was going to play anyways. Felt like Sam Darnold was going to start week one regardless. But man, does that suck if you're a Vikings fan, because he actually looks solid. He looks solid. And I think, you know, with some of these quarterbacks, I thought Caleb Williams to Chicago was a nice fit. Obviously, Jaden here is a nice fit. I didn't like the Drake May to New England fit. Penix with the Falcons, I didn't think it made any sense, but I think the fit is fine. I just didn't think the pick made sense. I think J.J. McCarthy to the Vikings, I didn't necessarily like McCarthy as a prospect, and yet I think in that spot, it's perfect. I think he will work well in Kevin O'Connell's offense, and I think you are seeing some of the glimpses of that. Unfortunately, now that season is done with a torn meniscus that he had surgery to repair. So hopefully it's something that it's a year-long thing and that's it. And he comes back better than ever, but we'll see. It sucks for Vikings fans that he's done. Bo Nix, his first game, he was really impressive. Played a lot, too. 15 to 21, 125 yards and a touchdown, 3 carries for 17 yards. He doesn't play today. He'll play tomorrow against the Packers at 8 o'clock. He's another one that I know a lot of people weren't necessarily fans of his coming out, but he played a lot of college football, a lot of college football. So he's kind of pro-ready in a lot of ways, and he steps into a place where I'm not comparing these two guys, but they've got at least somewhat similar skill sets in that Bo Nix can do a lot of what Drew Brees did at the end of his career. Not what Drew Brees did when Drew Brees was winning, you know, a Super Bowl and playing extremely high-level football, but at the end of his career when Drew Brees was, you know, working his way out of the league, Bo Nix can do a lot of that stuff, if not a little bit better than that. He doesn't necessarily have the mind of Drew Brees. I'm not saying that. But, you know, Sean Payton, I think, is going to be able to work with him in a way that he did with a lot with Drew Brees, where he's going to be able to work with guys that maybe don't have the most talent in the world, but they're able to just go out there and execute the offense. And so I think Payton's going to like how he fits into that sort of a scheme. And right away, I think you're going to be able to see this guy be successful. Would surprise me if he doesn't start week one. You would agree with that, right, Max? Like, if, to me, the whole point is you draft this guy that's a little bit older, played a lot of college football, you might as well start him. That's why it made no sense for me to draft Penix, another guy that kind of fit into that mold a little bit. That one makes no sense. But I think Bo Nix starts week one for the Broncos.
Yeah, it's going to be tough to... I feel like Sean Payton's already got... has kind of secretly already chosen Bo as the starter, but...
I just think it makes sense.
Yeah.
I think for a lot of reasons. I think he fits exactly the mold that Sean Payton likes. And, you know, as nice as it is sometimes to have a guy that's like a Patrick Mahomes, there's so few of those guys. If you had to choose, I think a lot of offensive coordinators would take a guy like a Bo Nix because he's just going to do what you ask him to do. When you call a play and it's drawn up for Cortland Sutton, the ball's going to go to Cortland Sutton. Like, there's no extra stuff going on. He's just going to do exactly what's asked and occasionally have to create. You know, I think McVay liked Goff for a little while because Goff would do some of that. And then he realized Goff can't do anything else other than that. And so that's why he went for Stafford. But I think sometimes it's nice to have that quarterback that, you know, when you call in a play, it's going to be ran exactly how you draw it up and kind of read exactly how you draw it up and try to do the what you're trying to accomplish as a play caller. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, let's kick off the final hour by talking with Craig Hoffman from The Hoffman Show on the Team 980, weekdays 4 to 7. We'll talk with Craig, get his thoughts on the game, and get you geared up for Commanders and Dolphins. Final hour comes up next here on a Burgundy and Gold Game Day right here on The Fan and the Team 980. It's a Burgundy and Gold Game Day here on The Fan. Jaden Daniels, the number 2 overall pick, going to suit up for the Commanders tonight. Second time you'll get a chance to see him on the game field. Take a look around the National Football League, though, and see how some of the other rookie quarterbacks have done. We'll start with the number 1 overall pick, the guy that everyone was raving about today with some ridiculous throws. I've been watching the one throw to Rome Odunze over and over and over again because it's been mesmerizing to watch. Caleb Williams, first game at Soldier Field. Numbers, not overly impressive, but if you watch some of the throws, you got to be really, really impressed. 6 for 13 and 75 yards. He also rushed for a touchdown, ran one in from 7 yards away. But you saw the talents on display today at Soldier Field for Caleb Williams. I think Bears fans are going to be really fired up about him. Good reason to be. He is so talented, and I think he's going to be really, really good. I know a lot of people were out on him for whatever reason. Not me. Count me all the way in on Caleb Williams. I think he's going to be an absolute stud. Drake May, he played on Thursday night against the Eagles, and he was picked number 3 overall, just behind the Commanders. The Patriots took him. 6 of 11, 47 yards, 4 carries, 15 yards, and a touchdown. That whole Patriots quarterback room looked very uninspiring in that game. But there was one throw that looked very much like North Carolina Drake May. It was an incompletion, so I don't want to be one of those guys that makes too much about a pass that ultimately hit the ground. But he stepped up in the pocket, made a nice throw deep down the field, and Javon Baker was unable to haul it in. But he saw a little bit of why he was drafted where he was, where he was able to maneuver in the pocket, and he showed off the nice arm. And for the most part, it was an accurate throw. He had to throw it a little bit down the field, you know, past his receiver because there was a defender trailing him. The guy was open. It was a nice throw. You know, it was a tough catch, though. So it's one of those you don't blame the receiver, but it was a really good throw. But regardless, not necessarily the most impressive performance. Michael Penix, the Falcons played the Ravens earlier today. He did not play, and it doesn't sound like he's going to play in the third preseason game either. So it makes no sense to me. It makes no sense whatsoever. It's what I talked about with the Patriots last week, which, by the way, with the Patriots, back to that real quick, Gerard Mayo said after the game that their quarterback competition isn't decided. It's definitely not over. So I don't know that there's a chance that May starts week one, but maybe there is. Maybe there is. And if that's the case, I think it makes it more intriguing. And to be honest with you, with how Brissett's looked, which, by the way, Brissett kind of sucked when he played here in the preseason and stuff. It wasn't very impressive. And I think when he stepped on the field in the actual game, he was fine. So maybe it's some of that. But with Drake May, he's been more impressive than Brissett because Brissett has looked awful. So maybe there's a chance they would do that. I don't think that's going to be the case, though. I think Brissett ultimately starts. But with Michael Penix, why are you not playing this guy? If you're not even going to see this guy for a couple of years, then why are you not playing him? You've already got a capable backup if something were to happen to Michael Penix and Taylor Heinicke, right? So the whole point of this is you're going to develop this guy to be your starting quarterback in, what, 2 to 3 years? So why is he not playing? Why? Get him some action, have him play, and just see what happens. I don't understand this one at all. What are you trying to keep him healthy for? Like, I understand you don't want him to get hurt. You want him to be able to continue to practice and develop. But, like, why are you acting super cautious with a guy who's not even supposed to suit up and play this year? He'll be your backup on game days, but he's not even supposed to step on the field this year. It's supposed to be Kirk Cousins. So why in the world is Michael Penix not playing? It makes absolutely no sense. This guy's not going to get game reps. So why is he not playing in the preseason? It's a perfect chance. This is like backups and rookies play in the preseason. He fits both of those bills. A backup and a rookie. Why is he not playing? Makes no sense. J.J. McCarthy for the Vikings, it sucks. He's out for the season. I saw that he was the first rookie, first rounder, quarterback that got hurt in the preseason and will miss his entire rookie season. That sucks. If you're a Vikings fan, that sucks. I don't know how much he was going to play anyways. Felt like Sam Darnold was going to start week one regardless. But man, does that suck if you're a Vikings fan, because he actually looks solid. He looks solid. And I think, you know, with some of these quarterbacks, I thought Caleb Williams to Chicago was a nice fit. Obviously, Jaden here is a nice fit. I didn't like the Drake May to New England fit. Penix with the Falcons, I didn't think it made any sense, but I think the fit is fine. I just didn't think the pick made sense. I think J.J. McCarthy to the Vikings, I didn't necessarily like McCarthy as a prospect, and yet I think in that spot, it's perfect. I think he will work well in Kevin O'Connell's offense, and I think you are seeing some of the glimpses of that. Unfortunately, now that season is done with a torn meniscus that he had surgery to repair, so hopefully it's something that it's a year-long thing, and that's it. And he comes back better than ever, but we'll see. It sucks for Vikings fans that he's done. Bo Nix, his first game, he was really impressive. Played a lot, too. 15 of 21, 125 yards and a touchdown, 3 carries for 17 yards. He doesn't play today. He'll play tomorrow against the Packers at 8 o'clock. He's another one that I know a lot of people weren't necessarily fans of his coming out, but he played a lot of college football, a lot of college football. So he's kind of pro-ready in a lot of ways, and he steps into a place where I'm not comparing these two guys, but they've got at least somewhat similar skill sets in that Bo Nix can do a lot of what Drew Brees did at the end of his career. Not what Drew Brees did when Drew Brees was winning, you know, a Super Bowl and playing extremely high-level football, but at the end of his career when Drew Brees was, you know, working his way out of the league, Bo Nix can do a lot of that stuff, if not a little bit better than that. He doesn't necessarily have the mind of Drew Brees. I'm not saying that. But, you know, Sean Payton, I think, is going to be able to work with him in a way that he did with a lot with Drew Brees, where he's going to be able to work with guys that maybe don't have the most talent in the world, but they're able to just go out there and execute the offense. And so I think Payton's going to like how he fits into that sort of a scheme. And right away, I think you're going to be able to see this guy be successful. Would surprise me if he doesn't start week one. You would agree with that, right, Max? Like, if, to me, the whole point is you draft this guy that's a little bit older, played a lot of college football, you might as well start him. That's why it made no sense for me to draft Penix, another guy that kind of fit into that mold a little bit. That one makes no sense. But I think Bo Nix starts week one for the Broncos.
Yeah, it's going to be tough to... I feel like Sean Payton's already got... has kind of secretly already chosen Bo as the starter, but...
I just think it makes sense.
Yeah.
I think for a lot of reasons. I think he fits exactly the mold that Sean Payton likes. And, you know, as nice as it is sometimes to have a guy that's like a Patrick Mahomes, there's so few of those guys. If you had to choose, I think a lot of offensive coordinators would take a guy like a Bo Nix because he's just going to do what you ask him to do. When you call a play and it's drawn up for Cortland Sutton, the ball's going to go to Cortland Sutton. Like, there's no extra stuff going on. He's just going to do exactly what's asked and occasionally have to create. You know, I think McVay liked Goff for a little while because Goff would do some of that. And then he realized Goff can't do anything else other than that. And so that's why he went for Stafford. But I think sometimes it's nice to have that quarterback that, you know, when you call in a play, it's going to be ran exactly how you draw it up and kind of read exactly how you draw it up and try to do the what you're trying to accomplish as a play caller. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, let's kick off the final hour by talking with Craig Hoffman from The Hoffman Show on the Team 980, weekdays 4 to 7. We'll talk with Craig, get his thoughts on the game, and get you geared up for Commanders and Dolphins. Final hour comes up next here on a Burgundy and Gold Game Day right here on The Fan and the Team 980.